Many religions and cultures teach that, like birth, death is a part of life. Barring illness or tragedy, a person is born, matures, hopefully grows old, and dies. When a child is born, parents, relatives, and friends are overjoyed. When a person dies, family and friends are often stricken with grief. Sometimes I think that we have it backwards. When a child is born, we should instead express reserved optimism, for we do not know what kind of person that child will grow to be. Will he be a productive member of society? Will she bring honor to her parents and community? The future of a newborn is yet to be determined. And so many influences are yet to take hold. When a person dies, the life of that person is arrayed before them. We know if they were good. We know if they did good. If they were generous, faithful, dedicated, honest, productive, and loving. Their life is their legacy, and in most cases, it is worthy of fond remembrance. Death brings us grief because it is so final. Birth brings us joy, hope, and optimism because it is so promising. As we have been reminded, especially in the 3 years since 9/11, all of life is temporary, and that is why it is so precious. Last Saturday was, of course, the Jewish Day of Atonement, the holiest day on the Jewish calendar. Part of that day is a memorial service where we remember our loved ones. And during the memorial service, we read in our prayer books the following paragraph. If some messenger were to come down to us with the offer that death should be overthrown, but with the one inseparable condition that birth should also cease, if the existing generation were given the chance to live forever, but on the clear understanding that never again would there be a child or a youth or a first love, never again new persons with new hopes, new ideas, new achievements, ourselves for always and never any others, could the answer be in doubt? I wonder how many of us hearing that have doubts. But when we look at the proposition rationally and realistically, surely there can be none. In our country today, there is a lot of lip service paid to children and children's issues. Our politicians constantly remind us that their policies are for the betterment of future generations. The pundits have indicated that so-called security moms now may very well determine the outcome of the November election. Parents continually worry and concern themselves with their children's safety, health, education, welfare, and eventual quality of life. Our society seems to be overprotective of its children. We have regulations on cigarettes and alcohol, child-proof, sometimes adult-proof caps on medicine bottles, warning labels on movies, video games, records, or they call them CDs now, books, magazines, and toys, child safety seats and restraints in cars. The list is endless. But for all the protection we seem to offer society's children, we know that millions and millions of them slip through the cracks. Millions and millions in our own country go hungry every day. Millions and millions are raised in poverty, receive little or no education or health care. Day after day, children whom we are told are our future are left to languish in obscurity and destitution, while we adults continue to argue over whether it takes a family or a village to raise them. This is not even to mention that in the United States, we seem to care only about our own children, allowing those in places like the Sudan or Sierra Leone to live lives we could not even imagine. If you ask me, I think our priorities are definitely backwards. We have 75 million children and teenagers under the age of 19. But we also have 200 million firearms. On average, 10 children every single day are killed by guns, what I call America's weapons of mass destruction. Among industrialized nations, we are number one in military technology, military exports, gross domestic product. We're number one in the number of millionaires and billionaires, in health technology and in defense expenditures. But, you know, we like being number one. So we're also number one in the number of children killed by guns, in the percentage of children who are born poor, in the number of people who are incarcerated, and in the number of teens who get pregnant. We have a huge gap between the rich and the poor, and infant mortality and low birth rates among minorities and the poor are far above where they should be. Instead of ensuring that a parent has food, clothing, and shelter for their children, we focus only on whether the children were born in wedlock, whether and how long the mother has been on welfare when the children were born, and if the father is even known, let alone if he supports his children. When it comes to violence on television and in the movies, we say that it is the parents who must show responsibility. Parents have to turn off the TV. Parents must monitor the movies and music and the computer that the children are exposed to. Parents must become the child's primary influence. But meanwhile, we also allow toy companies and numerous other industries to exploit children for their own economic benefit. If you ever watch the Disney Channel, you know what I'm talking about. We say that television, movies, and music, they really don't have any influence on the young. After all, we adults sometimes say, I was exposed to plenty of scenes of violence as a child, even worse than they have now, and I turned out okay. We allow children to realistically act out simplistic good versus evil scenarios and to fantasize minute by minute about conquering imaginary villains. We allow them to participate in realistic killing scripts in their own living rooms and in the privacy of their own bedrooms. Instead of teaching our children love, respect, honor, responsibility, hard work, and gratitude, our society teaches them opulence, conceit, narcissism, immediate gratification, and intensive frustration when they are not given what they want. By the way, I know I have four children myself, including 10-month-old twins. We make laws, and then we refuse to obey them. We are concerned with our own personal gain, and it seems as though selfishness, cruelty, and dishonesty prevail. Well, many people ask, how did it all get to be so bad? Many people think that our society today is an aberration, an exception in history, a unique period in humankind, and that we are headed towards self-destruction. But those of us who are students of the biblical text know better. For thousands of years, we have learned and taught the story of Noah and the flood, the story of how one righteous human being can make a difference in saving the world, how corruption, dishonesty, and selfishness can destroy the world, and how when people create or build for fame or for power over others, they bring unhappiness and confusion to the world. Our rabbis ask, why did God bring the flood? And our Jewish sages tell us that it was because the people of Noah's generation began to take all of life for granted. They felt no need to give thanks for what they had. They stopped worshiping God and caring for God's creatures. And they began to worship only themselves, and they began to care only about themselves. I know that there are many a preacher who have used the Noah flood story to warn their congregation of impending doom. Stop your evil ways, your cheating, your lying, mistrust, and sin, the preacher will yell out. But this is not my purpose here, and that usage of the story is not what at least Judaism has historically taught. Instead, we choose to focus on the ending of the story. When God proclaims that never again will another flood be brought upon the earth, we focus not on the flood, not on the tide of destruction, but on the symbol of hope. We focus on the rainbow, the sign of the covenant with which God makes that promise. We say that we have learned our lesson, that corruption and evil shall yet give way to integrity and goodness. We recognize that the earth is in our hands to do with what we please, to care for it as we desire. We control the floodwaters. We have the ability to destroy the earth and humankind. We humans determine our own destiny. Our sages understood the flood brought by God not as direct punishment by God, but as self-imposed destruction. Our world today is not that much different than when Noah lived. Oh, sure, we could certainly build a better ark than Noah did. Of course, we'd have to equip it with luxury suites, internet access, satellite TV, Olympic-sized pools, lots of bars and restaurants, you know. But the ark was the escape vessel. We shouldn't be looking to build any ark. Rather, we should be focusing on our problems, our societal ills, and the evil that we ourselves create. In 2 weeks, the weekend of October 15th through 17th, that weekend has been designated National Children's Sabbath by the Children's Defense Fund. And during that annual weekend, thousands of congregations of all faiths will join in highlighting the issues involving our country's children, who have no actual voice in our government, since, as we know, they cannot vote. This year's theme is, Say That I Am a Child of God. All of us and all humankind are children of God. And as such, we have to work to love and protect our children and those around the world. I'm encouraged and inspired by the many Americans who come together each year to highlight these issues and to remember that we have much to do. After September 11th, 2001, we saw people of all faiths and backgrounds stand side by side, hand in hand, against tyranny and evil, against terrorism and fear. But we have to recognize that child poverty, gun violence, lack of health insurance, and teen suicide are also our common enemy. To me, these are weapons of mass destruction because they destroy a child's hope. We need to come together, not to argue over the causes, but to agree, or try to agree, on solutions. I wish for a new world where Republicans and Democrats, those of different races and religions, people of all backgrounds, can see past their differences to combat a common enemy. We just have to realize that poverty and violence are just as evil and just as destructive as car bombs and terrorist threats. I'm not concerned with how or why things got to be so bad. I'm not even concerned with whether or not things really are as bad as some people would like to believe. What I do know is that there is a great need for healing, especially now. Healing in our families, in our communities, and in our country. Say That I Am a Child of God is an effort to give all children not just a voice, but also a healthy start, a head start, a fair start, a safe start, a moral start. Is not health, advancement, fairness, safety, and morality what we value most in our lives and in our society? are not all people, young and old, entitled to benefit from these values? The Torah, which is housed in our ark behind those doors, the Torah is the foundational text of Judaism. And as Al mentioned at the beginning of the service, the Torah begins with the story of creation, and then follows the world's destruction. But it's interesting to note that the Torah does not provide another story of creation after the flood. Perhaps that is because the world is constantly in a state of being created or recreated. Judaism holds and believes that human beings are partners with God in creation and in the work of tikkun olam, the repairing and healing of the world. Certainly a crucial part of this work involves caring for the most needy and vulnerable in our communities and societies. Just as the actions of those who came before us affect us, our actions today will affect those in the future. From this day forth, let each of us say, I am a child of God. You are a child of God. We, together, are children of God. Let us also pray, speak out, and act. Amen.